We're going to stay, though, in the United States because it needs to do some soul-searching. That's the view of President Obama. This, of course, a week after the acquittal of George Zimmerman, who shot dead an unarmed black teenager, Trayvon Martin, in Florida. The case has led to a nationwide discussion about race and self-defense laws in America. And at a news conference, Mr. Obama said it raised questions about racial profiling.
If a white male teen was involved in the same kind of scenario, that from top to bottom, both the outcome and the aftermath might have been different.
Well, Andra Gillespie is an associate professor of political science, specializing in political mobilization and race at Emory University in Atlanta. What does she make of President Obama's remarks?
Unlike in his first term, President Obama was boldly speaking out on race regardless of the consequences. There were a couple of racial incidents during his first term, namely the Henry Louis Gates incident in 2009 and the Shirley Sherrod incident in 2010, where his administration garnered a lot of criticism, one for speaking out with respect to racial issues, and then in the case of Shirley Sherrod, acting probably too quickly before all the facts had been gathered. In this particular case, President Obama counted the cost and took a calculated risk in speaking out with respect to race. And in doing so, he endeared himself to many African Americans who were frustrated with the Zimmerman verdict and waiting for President Obama to take some moral leadership on this particular issue.
I'm interested in your observation about it being a calculated risk. What's the risk here?
Well, I mean, President Obama doesn't gain anything politically, really, from speaking out on this issue. As president of the United States, it's really deferred to the Justice Department to decide whether or not civil rights charges can be brought against George Zimmerman. And the threshold is actually going to be really high to bring them. So a lot of people have said that it's very unlikely that federal charges will be brought against George Zimmerman. And in speaking out against race, while African Americans might be pleased with this and their allies may be pleased with this, there are also a lot of people, particularly conservatives, who are not pleased by the situation. And so he's likely going to experience probably a slight drop in the next week in his overall approval rating as a result of it. But President Obama clearly felt this week like it was important for him to speak out, especially since there have been a number of protests around the country. There are massive protests that are being scheduled for Saturday all across the United States. And so he really stepped out on a limb, not just as president, but also as president, as kind of moral leader of the United States, and taking advantage of this opportunity to speak out on in issues in a way that's actually sort of in a way that we've never seen him do it before.
And on the protests, he says he understands why they might happen, but will change his mind immediately if violence occurs.
Most of the protests so far in the United States have been peaceful. There have been some incidents of violence in California, in particular in Los Angeles and in Oakland, California. But most of the demonstrations so far this week have been pretty peaceful. If this were to turn into a situation like the Los Angeles riots of 1992, then President Obama would, of course, speak out forcefully against that. And part of his speaking out today was to just warn people that if they were thinking of becoming violent, that that's really not a good idea. So I think in many ways this was somewhat preemptive. But what he was saying was that he understood the frustrations and he took the time to articulate to people who have not understood why people have been dissatisfied with the verdict and why African-Americans in particular have been very upset, with the verdict, and sort of to put this in a context that hopefully other people could understand. And even if they disagree, they could at least come to the table and really consider the other side of the story.
Professor Andra Gillespie in Atlanta. Patrick Basham, what do you make of President Obama's comments here?
Well, I don't doubt for a moment that he's saying what he thinks to be true and is very heartfelt. We also have to recognize, as the professor suggested, that there is politics here. The African-American vote, which has always been very important to the Democratic Party in modern times, is increasingly important. And sort of one of the outstanding questions in American politics is when President Obama leaves office, will the African-American vote, as in the turnout, drop back to more historic levels, which would be bad news for the Democrats? And President Obama is trying to ensure that doesn't happen by publicly saying the things that he publicly believes. And also, you know, looking at fundraising, which is obviously so critical in American politics, the black groups are actively fundraising, using or exploiting, depending how you care to characterize it, the Trayvon Martin case and the verdict. The Democratic Party is doing that. It's perfectly, that's perfectly reasonable. Republicans and conservatives do the similar thing with different issues. So there's a lot of politics here.
But there's also, I mean, there's another big issue, isn't there? I mean, when he talks about racial profiling, and he's effectively saying most people of my background know exactly what this feels like because it's pretty much happened to us. And that's quite a big thing to say.
It is. And what it speaks to, I think accurately, is that there are two conversations going on in America this week. One is a cultural conversation, or should I say two narratives. One is a cultural narrative that President Obama has articulated, where blacks in particular are trying to put it in the context of racial profiling and why Trayvon Martin felt apparently the way he did, why he may have acted towards George Zimmerman the way that the court evidence suggests he did, et cetera, et cetera. At the same time, most whites and most conservative Americans are putting forth a narrative which is sort of legalistic, which is looking at the evidence as presented in the court, and at the same time looking at George Zimmerman and saying, well, you know, here's a guy trying to keep his neighborhood safe. It's crime-ridden. He is acting in a way that most people would if they are feeling insecure. So basically, these are two narratives that go past one another. And that, sadly, may continue.
Lale, what do you make of it?
I was devastated but not surprised by the verdict. And I think that a lot of the legalistic arguments, as Patrick correctly says, about the situation ignore the fact that the law in the United States has for a very long time and with very few disruptions completely and totally saturated with racial politics, both the legislation of it, the implementation of it, and the ways in which it's practiced in courts. We know for a fact that had the person walking down the street in a hoodie been a white person and middle class, they wouldn't have been considered to be a threat. We know for a fact that had the person that had shot the gun been black or African American, that person would not have been acquitted so easily. And we know that a lot of the arguments that are made about the right to bear arms only really apply to white people in the US and should the same argument were to be applied to African Americans, a lot of the supporters of the right to bear arms would withdraw their support. So in a way, all of this is predicated on a long history of racism in the country, which it completely and totally is embedded in every single institution that you find, every political institution.
President Obama interestingly says, against that background, that things are getting better.
I'm not entirely sure what he means by things are getting better. Obviously, the expansion of affluence among African Americans is not something that statistics necessarily bears out. There are some people who are becoming more affluent, but as a general rule, ghettoization continues, poverty continues. In fact, the story that we're going to have later on about Detroit going bankrupt is also about race. So I'm not entirely sure what he's talking about. Having an African American president is not necessarily the meaning of post-racial society.
Have a listen to this, both of you, because this takes us down a slightly different avenue against the same background. Because Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York, who formerly served, for several years as a police officer with the New York City Police Department, thinks the George Zimmerman case hasn't just exposed racial divisions in the country, but also revealed a bias against young people. And this is his take on the story.
Almost all of the commentary in the wake of last week's acquittal of George Zimmerman focused on whether Zimmerman's shooting of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was racially motivated. While there's no dispositive proof about whether race was a factor, out of Zimmerman's own mouth came evidence he targeted Martin because he was a teen. "These effing punks always get away," he said on a 911 tape played at the trial, using a slur unmistakably reserved for young people. U.S. Department of Justice officials are considering whether to charge Zimmerman with violating Martin's civil rights, though there are no protections for victims of crimes motivated by malice towards youth. Would Zimmerman have followed and confronted an older, well-dressed black man in similar circumstances? Or did a young African-American teen, dressed in the emblematic uniform of an urban kid, a hoodie, provide an irresistible draw for the attentions of an overeager, gun-toting man pounding the beat of a neighborhood watch. Were Zimmerman's actions, from first step to fatal wounding, accompanied by an inchoate sense that any account he would later render to fellow adults would be credited over the word of an adolescent? Florida's Stand Your Ground law enshrines perceived fears in legitimacy, telling citizens they're foolish to depend on others to protect them. Community divisions are heightened, leading people to see strangers as potential assailants. Dangerousness is assessed using the dubious clues of age, clothing, race, or national origin. Stand Your Ground recklessly goads armed people to misdiagnose and escalate encounters with others, and creates a split-second need to make profound life-and-death decisions with spotty and unreliable information. Much was made of Zimmerman's unrealized aspiration to become a police officer. It would be the rare cop who did not know at least one colleague whose motivations for wearing the uniform is the exercise of raw bullying power over others, often rooted in an officer's own insecurities. As a former NYPD officer and someone who has conducted human dignity training for officers in Africa, Europe, and the Caribbean, I know the first step to gross abuses by the police is often the labeling of others with terms of derision. Effing punk, Zimmerman's assumptive description of Martin, paved a path that denuded the youth of his right to be treated as a unique individual, as a person. To its credit, the American police establishment has been vocal in recent months, scorning the indiscriminate availability of firearms for the fit and unfit alike, and attacking efforts to enact so-called self-defense laws that preordain violent resolutions instead of venerating human life.
Eugene O'Donnell from John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. Brief observation on the distrust of youth element to this story, Lale.
Although I largely agree with that, I also think that had that youth been white and dressed in preppy clothes, he would not, and better yet, if it had been a woman, would not have been profiled in the same way. So there are certain intersections of gender, class, and race that end up overlaying the idea of being a youth or an adult or a grown-up. And I think that cannot be forgotten. Race is just so incredibly important to the ways in which power is structured in the US.
Patrick, a final observation from you on that.
Much of that is true. What we also have to remember, though, is that the profiling went both ways, because the telephone conversation that Trayvon Martin had with his girlfriend while he was being followed and he felt intimidated by George Zimmerman before the actual altercation, he used derogatory terms to describe Zimmerman as Zimmerman apparently used towards Martin. So this is what I'm trying to say is that there's a lot of shades of gray in this tragic, sad situation. It's not, excuse the pun, necessarily simply black and white.